This is episode 39 of The Living Reminders with Mary and Blake. From Providence, Rhode Island, welcome to The Living Reminders. It's a podcast dedicated to the leftovers on HBO. We're still here and so are you, so let's chat with Liv Tyler. Suddenly I'm hit. It's the darkness of the dawn. When your friends are gone, when your friends won't come, so show me where you fit. Hello, everyone, and welcome. I'm your host, Mary Larson.
My name's Blake, and I am just like totally just busting at the seams about this episode.
Yeah.
Busting at the seams.
I hear you, man.
On multiple levels. First of all, we're back. We're back for an episode.
Yes. I've missed you guys. I've missed talking about the leftovers. I miss it all.
Yeah. And as you have noticed, we are having someone that is quite special on the show today in preparation for the Emmys and Emmy talk and the special performance that she put on in season two, which is arguably the best season of television that's ever been produced. My love, are you co-signing on that? Do you still feel like that's the case,
or at least it's top three? I would say it was at least one of the best seasons of television I've ever seen.
Right.
Yeah. I
mean, because since The Leftovers, we've now watched a couple of different shows. I mean, we started Halt and Catch Fire. We started, we watched Battlestar Galactica. And even with all those things still going on, you still say it's definitely...
Oh, yeah.
At least top three.
I'd say that. I would say top three.
Yeah, I would
agree. You can sign me up to that for sure. I adore this show, and yeah. It's wild. It's amazing. It makes you think in different ways that a television show has not made me think before, and I cannot wait to see what season three brings.
I know. Oh,
I mean, I loved season one of The Leftovers. Season two brought it on a whole different level. And season three, I think, is going to take it up a notch as well. So, yeah, lots of Emmy talk, and there should be for this show.
Mm-hmm. I'm ready.
Yeah.
I'm ready for the show to come back. But most importantly, today, we obviously have Liv Tyler. And I got to tell you, my love, there have been certain times in my life when... when things are really special. We got married. We talked to Damon Lindelof. But this was one of those things that has been in the making, I think, since her Armageddon days for me. I think I fell madly in love with Liv Tyler when I saw her in Armageddon. And
so this is your starstruck moment.
I was totally starstruck with Damon Lindelof, clearly. Like, I had to take, like, Zoloft to speak to him because I was that happy and nervous. But this was one of those ones where I was like, I was super nervous, man. And it's Liv Tyler. Like, oh my God, how cool was that? How cool is that?
Well, people are going to find out how cool it is.
I know. So why don't we stop wasting our time? You ready to get into the conversation
you
with
bet.
Liv? All right, let's do it.
Joining us is Liv Tyler, a model, activist, and one of Hollywood's most famous actresses, whose notable roles include Empire Records, That Thing You Do, I can't say without singing it, Armageddon, The Lord of the Rings, and The Strangers, among many others. But we all know her as the cryptic, enigmatic, and downright terrifying Meg Abbott from our favorite show on HBO, The Leftovers. Liv, thank you so much for joining us on The Living Reminders today.
Thank you for having me.
So how did you personally find out about The Leftovers? Did someone put the book in your hands, or was it an agent, or did you just happen to hear about it?
Actually, it was I have an assistant and girlfriend, someone that I work closely with named Sari Schaefer, and she and I were, I was like sort of at a different stage in my career where I was feeling slightly frustrated or disinterested in waiting around to see what people were bringing to me or what my agents were bringing to me. They're all super talented and amazing, but I wasn't necessarily excited about the things that were coming my way. So I had been loving television for a few years and kind of wanting to pursue stuff. And everyone would always encourage me to develop my own project or something like that. And I said, no, I want to be a part of some sort of wacky, amazing group of people. And I love ensembles. And so Sari and I just started to kind of focus a little bit and watch all the shows and ask for all the treatments and the scripts. And pilot season was coming up. And so The Leftovers was one of those scripts when we got really focused on it. And we read it. And it kind of happened like that. And we called. And they said that they weren't really interested in me for the part. I fell in love with the part of Meg. I don't know why, of all the females in the whole story. I hadn't read the book at that point, but I had an instant attraction to that character. And in the original script, it said she was a 26-year-old redhead or something. they said, oh, that's okay. And I said, no, I want to come in and meet. And so I actually went in and read. There was only one page. And then I don't know exactly what happened because I didn't hear from them for a couple weeks. They were in L.A. casting, so I actually didn't even meet with any of the heads of the studio or Damon or anyone. I just literally went in and kind of said, this is my interpretation of this character. I love her, and I'd love to be a part of this project. So kind of like that. And then Damon tells a very funny story that he watched the tape and was like, oh, shit, Liv Tyler's pissed. But I was like, there was like some sort of intensity or anger that came across in whatever that interpretation I had of her was. And so, then it all just sort of happened from there.
Now, you say that you were searching. Were you looking specifically to do television? And if so, did you have any requirements that you felt this show needed to meet before you found The Leftovers? For example, what studios you wanted to work with, or networks, or showrunners, et cetera?
It was more simple. It was just, after I've been working in this business since I was a teenager. So it's that way of constantly trying to reinvent yourself and find things that are interesting to you. And I've always wanted to be a mother and families. I think being second generation of this entertainment industry, I've seen so many ups and downs and nothing surprises me. And I know I have a sort of very different perspective, I would imagine, than if you're just coming into it for the first time. So I was wanting to just find something that would allow me to be able to be home and be a good mother and also be working and not having to go away for 3 months to, somewhere that's not my home and uproot the whole family. I kept thinking there must be some way I can find an incredible project that will shoot in New York that I can be passionate about and involved in while also being, kind of wearing both of those hats of being a grounded, good, normal parent and acting. But it was mostly that. I mean, I always had an attraction for HBO. And at this time, this was something I was sort of expressing interest in television for a few years before I think even my agents and stuff were really thinking that it was something that I should be doing. So there was a few years there where nothing really happened and I kept saying, no, I don't know why. These characters are amazing and it's so good. And I liked it more than I was sort of liking movies at the time. So, and I liked the idea that there was this sort of evolution of the character and the experience. The closest thing I'd ever had to that experience of working on something for a long time was on The Lord of the Rings. And that was like about a 3.5-year experience. And I loved that feeling of knowing that each year we were going to go back to work. And each year I would see those same faces and I could bring something new to the character. And it's because you just don't get that when you're making a film. It's quick. It's 3 months, you're in and you're out, and you have these incredible relationships, but then you never see the people again, and you have to sort of say goodbye to the characters. And I was craving something that had a little bit more meat to it than that. So that was kind of where it came from.
You brought up a couple of things that really intrigued me. First of all, you've said you fell in love with the character of Meg. Mm-hmm. And I'd like to know why, like what specifically that was. But
I have no idea. I swear I always say that the way I feel about my characters is like how you feel about a lover. Like you can't explain when someone walks in the room and they just have that chemistry. You know, you have that chemistry with them or there's something about them that just is magical to you, and it's so personal. And I always have that with characters. I can remember pretty much every film I've ever done, having that sort of connection, and it's so great when it happens. But I definitely had it for Meg, and I didn't have it for any of the other female characters.
Can you talk about which portion you read for your tryout? Was that something that was part of the show, or was that something written completely separate by Damon? Do you remember?
It was just the pilot. It was one scene. I actually can't remember. Pregnant brain is not allowing me to remember exactly what the scene was. Sort of like normal pre-GR Meg, but you could see in behind the eyes there was something troubled, and that there was this other sort of spirit in there that was longing to get out, and that she was searching for something. It was like there wasn't that much to the scene, but all of that was kind of brewing. You know, it was like typical Damon and Tom writing where there is so much to it. You look at it and you think, oh, this is only a page long, but it's like the more when you start to actually act it out, there's so many layers and complexities, and it's so fun as an actor to get to do that, you know?
As a viewer, we get to see that Meg is clearly upset and frustrated and angry and yet vulnerable, but there seems to be something else in her character, and you're starting to talk about that, something much deeper. What do you think that is?
Oh, I always feel quite shy. It's so hard to articulate. I don't know. It's very, honestly, Meg is so different from who I am as Liv that oftentimes I feel my normal process when I'm being someone else or playing a character is I do a lot of studying and research and think about things. And with Meg, I often have to kind of, it's sort of the opposite. It's like just jumping off the cliff and completely trusting and going with this more impulsive sort of side of my personality, which isn't very natural to me. So a lot of times I try quite hard to not overthink a lot of the things that she does. And obviously, I mean, Damon writes the craziest things for all of us to do, which are so fun, you know. But I a lot of times don't always understand why I'm doing the things that I'm doing when I'm doing them, to be honest. And I will often write to him and ask him to explain it to me. But I think that's a lot of times just my like Liv voice kind of coming in and going, I would never do that. Or trying to kind of make sense of it, you know?
Well, you had these two scenes then that I wanted to talk about. Obviously, the scene with Chris Zilka in the van, and then, you know, pouring the gas all over him with the lighter, and also the scene with the kids in the bus. I don't see Liv Tyler doing that. But can you talk about what it was like to film and what? How did you go with Damon about that? How did he give you any specific ideas, or even Mimi Leader, or anybody that was there with you?
I mean, the process of, I mean, even now we're filming the third season, and they really don't tell us much. And at first I found that so hard to understand because it was just, I'd never experienced that before. When you make a film, you're very close to one director and they tell you everything. There's no secrets, you know, or surprises, or there's no scenes that are unwritten, you know. But with this, it's a whole other thing. It's like this great mystery where many different pieces of a puzzle, and you know, we'll get one episode and then we have to wait for the other ones to come. We have no idea what's going to happen in it to our characters or to the story. Are we going to live, or are we going to die, or are we going to do something completely bananas? And at first I struggled so much with that because it just, I felt I didn't know what to kind of like ground myself in. And then now I find it so thrilling and exciting, and I love it, and I just completely trust in the talent group, you know, that's sort of writing and creating everything. But we don't really know what's going to happen, when it's going to happen. So by the time I had gotten to that scene with Chris in the van, I had just had my last baby, Sailor, like literally like a couple weeks before. And that was going to be my first scene going back to work. So I was definitely surprised and shocked and but excited. And I didn't know how that scene was going to work, because on the page, it you know, I didn't, whenever you have to do sex scenes, it's always so strange, and particularly that one, and I didn't totally understand. But then when we actually shot the scene, and Carl Franklin was the director of that episode, and there was, again, you know, things underneath the obvious that come out in the storytelling and in the writing that are just so fun to play as an actor. There's all these other layers that just started to come up. And I think for those two people, they're both like so desperate for connection, you know, and they're both searching, and they're both, you know, have a lot of rage inside of them and all sorts of things going on. So it was a interesting scene to play out. We hadn't really had that much interaction ever before that, you know.
You're talking about these different feelings that Meg was able to go through, and also even just the beginning of your audition with Meg's part really just being on this one little page. How do you think Meg has grown between seasons one and two?
I think that she has become more confident, and she's let go of the sort of vulnerable aspects of herself, and I think she's found a feeling of strength. I don't know always if I understand exactly what it is about the GR that everyone's connecting to, but for her, it gives her something to believe in and to focus on, and it's given her, she's found herself, I suppose, like the truest part of her spirit. It's not necessarily a great growth, but it's a power, you know, and from within, I would say.
Speaking of the GR, is Meg committed to the Guilty Remnant in particular? Because she doesn't seem to have time for the old rules, like not talking. So do you think she intends on creating her own form of the Guilty Remnant?
I think she's just questioning all of those things and trying to understand it, you know, how to most effectively have an impact. And if the idea is to cause people to not forget, she doesn't want, you know, no one wants them to forget, and they're kind of trying to constantly surprise people. And people wanted to just go back to their normal lives and feel comfortable again. And I think the whole point of the GR is that, well, there is no normal anymore. This thing happened, and we're fucked, and it's never going to be the same again. So trying to go back to the way that we felt before isn't the solution. So remember and start preparing and for whatever is going to come next. And so I think that that's the idea of like constantly trying to rustle everyone's feathers and write just, you know, when they feel comfortable, pull the rug out from under them in some kind of way. And I think that's like what the bus scene is you're not safe and your children aren't safe, but they are, because we didn't blow anybody up, actually. that's something, you know, like that could happen kind of thing.
What about Miracle then? Like you say that you want people to remember and all that the character Meg does. What about Miracle then do you think makes Meg so like viscerally hateful? Like it seems like she's really got it out for these people.
I think she feels tricked. I think that in that episode, you know, you kind of see, you hear the discussion she has with her husband, and you get the sense that since her mother's death was so abrupt, and then the whole thing happened with the departure the next day, like, it just, she's searching. She wants to know what's going on, and she's been reaching out to, you know, everyone, psychics and anyone she can to kind of try and find answers. She's very lost, it seems like, and she doesn't feel happy in her or settled in her life. You know, she can't just go back to being happy with her fiancé and planning her life, so she's pissed. You know, she's trying to figure it out, and I think she goes to Miracle thinking that she'll find that answer, and that she doesn't. And I never really decided within myself what it is that Isaac tells her. Or I never really asked Damon what that was that kind of makes her angry, but I think it's like everything all gathered up together, kind of exploding at that point, that sort of sends her over the edge, you know?
Yeah, and in that flashback episode, were you expecting Meg to be a drug addict? You know, what was your favorite moment from that episode? It definitely surprised
Damon
me.
Damon always said that she wasn't like a cokehead at all, but she just like occasionally would have a little bump here and there. And that particularly to get through like a lunch with her mom, she might think that was fun. And I had always imagined that Meg was like one of those kinds of people that on the surface was one way, but had like a whole secret life underneath. And so I used to always fantasize that she would like sneak off to the city and have lovers and maybe do drugs and have like wild experiences. But we never saw that, and Damon never wrote any of it. But I was happy when he wrote that little part, because I did always imagine that that was part of her, that she wasn't completely living her truth, that she had this other stuff inside of her that she didn't always know where to put, you know? So I thought that was a nice little layer in there.
I also think that it helped mirror the character of Evie, who we got to see on the surface as being, you know, this perfect daughter, and yet she had a completely secret life that her family didn't know about. So I didn't know if you could help explain Meg's relationship with Evie and how you think they got in contact with each other after their first encounter.
I know. No idea. it's amazing how many twists and turns and things there are. And I mean, I can formulate my own, you know, I daydream about it and think about it. And sometimes I'll ask Tom and Damon but sometimes I just don't even try and figure it all out, if that makes any sense.
What was your reaction to the big reveal in that penultimate episode? Were you as blown away
what happened? What's the big reveal? Forget everything. With Evie?
Yes, with Evie.
Oh.
Mom brain. I mean, again, as you guys feel as the audience watching it, I feel that same way, even though I'm in it. Where I'm like, wow, right, okay. You know, it's like, it is what it is, and we all formulate our own ideas. I mean, as the cast, we all kind of like, we're like, well, I heard this and I heard that. And, you know, we kind of try and put all the pieces of the puzzle together, but you just never really know. So when things like that happen and we find out about them or we read the script, and it's just kind of like, oh, wow. And then you kind of go back and try and think about things that might have alluded to that, or how long did they know that for when they were writing it, but sort of no one told us, and that kind of stuff.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
How do you want viewers to view Meg?
Oh, boy. I don't know, however they want to. I don't mind.
They can be just terrified. How's that sound?
It's been so fun for me to get to play this character. I've really, really enjoyed it.
I was going to ask you, do you feel like a sense of like power when you're like, and I know I'm not sure if you're a method actor or not, I don't know, but when you're playing this character, it just seems like she's in control of everything. She always seems like she's a step ahead of everybody, especially
she's
in the second season.
Definitely fearless.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just really fun. It's sort of liberating and freeing, and I definitely have enjoyed it a lot. And it was interesting because there was parts of Meg that were just parts of me that had never kind of ever come out before. It was like we opened this door of this whole other personality, and so it's been really fun just to kind of like open that door, I guess, explore and play with it. And it's funny when we're down there filming or wherever we are, and we, you know, you get really into the headspace of it and sort of doing it every day. Coming home is a strange thing because I have to remind myself all the time, like, all right, I can't do that, and I can't, you know, it's such a different world. I think what everyone does, every character has things that they're doing that are pretty crazy that you can't be doing in the real world.
Well, looking back from season one up until now, do you have a particular highlight or a favorite moment experiencing that you've had in the role of Meg?
They're all highlights. I've enjoyed them all, to be honest. I mean, I loved, just as an actor, the indulgence and the gift of getting to play. My whole episode that I had in season two was amazing. That was just such a great experience for me. I loved the director of that episode so much. I really enjoyed working with him, and I just loved the way everything was written and how we got to see so much of her, so much Meg before and after, and that was just completely... I was in heaven, basically, for that whole 2 weeks. I really enjoyed that a lot. I also really enjoyed season one a lot. You know, there were so many moments and so much kind of transformation that she's going through. Mm-hmm. One scene that sort of stands out for me is the scene where I chopped down the tree with the axe, because that was our second episode, I guess. That was like the pilot had been picked up, and then we were coming back to work, and Pete Berg was filming, and that was supposed to be, it was like a series of three scenes that you kind of like cut in and out. It was like Lori and I in the woods, and to kind of show, like, there was like kind of this prolonged thing where we were like walking around in the woods, and it was really creepy, and you didn't know what was going to happen, and then the axe thing started to happen, and then she was frustrated, and then it went a bit nuts, but it was like a lot longer, and it was supposed to be like a half a day of filming. And Pete is crazy in the best of ways, but he shoots very fast, and it's all like, way. And we were really behind on something else, so we basically had like 1 hour of daylight left to shoot what we would have shot in 3 or 4 hours, I think. And it was snowing, and there was like all those elements. And so we never really got to rehearse or talk about it. And literally, like, Pete just threw me in the woods with her and was just like, so like there was dialogue for the three scenes, but we weren't going to be able to do it in that way. So we kind of just had to improvise and just like create a scene very quickly. And I remember I was quite nervous and I didn't really know what to do. And I hadn't kind of discovered that whole part of Meg yet. And, I remember Pete just grabbed me by the shoulders, and he looked me really deep in the eye and really frantically, and he just looked me in the eye and he said, "You are a great actress. You can do this. Just don't fucking hurt yourself." And it was the greatest direction ever, because it was just, that's all I needed to hear in that moment. It was like, you know, sometimes you just need somebody to tell you everything's okay, or just go with your gut, or what. He kind of said all those things to me. And in a way that just made me think, like, okay, he was basically just saying, like, trust your gut. Just do whatever the fuck you want. I don't care. Just don't hurt yourself. And it was a moment that always stands out to me, because that was a moment for me that I definitely had, like, a little bit of an awakening as myself, Liv, and as the character. And I just, like, was like, okay. I just completely let go and hit that tree with that semi-rubber axe, which is strange. Nothing was happening.
There's this great picture of you, behind the scenes picture of like you holding the axe up and like smiling with complete glee.
Well, there was also paparazzi there that day. That was the other thing that I was so stressed and nervous about, because there, you can't tell them to go away, apparently, in the state of New York. Like, on set, they're allowed to be there. And we were in the woods, and I was just feeling so not excited that they were there. And especially doing a scene like that. And I just thought, oh, go away. And there was literally, one of them was right next to the camera. Like, the film camera was there, and the paparazzi was next to it. And I again had to just, like, completely surrender to the situation and not be self-conscious. But I think that's probably what that shot was.
What were the differences between filming in New York and Texas for season two? I mean, other than the heat, of course. What's it like in Texas?
Well, yeah, the New York one was absolutely freezing. It was the coldest winter ever. So fucking cold. It was crazy. And we were outside all the time. And then the Texas one. I mean, it was kind of like the feeling you have when you watch the show. Like, the New York version definitely felt a little bit more grim and gray and sad, and it was about pain and loss and suffering. And then the Texas version was like this whole new world and sunshine and going to this new place and meeting new people. And it was that same kind of vibe that you kind of see when you watch the show, you know?
We had the pleasure of speaking with Kevin Carroll, and he said that the cast felt like it was kind of isolated in Texas, and but that he really liked it, that he was getting information from like his friends of what people were saying about the show or whatever, and he felt like that you guys really bonded during that time. Did you?
I loved being that's my favorite thing about this job, is getting to go on location and like leave your normal life and go to a whole new place, and because you're not just going as a tourist for 3 days, you're actually living there, you know, in a house and experiencing the culture for many, many weeks. And I loved that part of our job, and I just completely adored Austin so much. It's a very sweet place. There's so much to do there. It's really fun. It's a little bit eccentric and wacky, but beautiful and a little bit cosmopolitan too. It's got a lot of good stuff. And the people are super sweet.
Sounds like it. I think we need to take a trip there, Blake.
It's really fun. Like, it's just a crazy, I mean, even I just went back to film, and I was only there for 2 days, and I was in the hotel, so I wasn't, you know, I didn't really go exploring that much, but I came home from work and the sun was setting, and I stood out on my little balcony and I watched, you know, the bats that fly out from under the bridge every night. Do you know about that?
I didn't, but it sounds amazing.
It's every night as the sun sets at the same time. I think it's like, I don't even know how, it's 10 million bats or something. There's this one bridge and people all come from all over to watch it, and they, at the same second, just all start to sort of they start from left to right, and you just watch them all kind of fly out, and then they fly down the river and they go out for the night. And it's so beautiful and strange and only happens there, but it's like a kind of a tourist thing, you know, like the barges and boats and people stand on the bridge, and it's super sweet.
That sounds great.
Yeah.
So we've asked this next question of everyone that we've been able to interview about this show, and The Leftovers is somewhat a difficult show to describe, and that's an awesome thing. But what do you feel when you watch The Leftovers?
Oh, I just love it so much. It's really completely my cup of tea. I like so much that we get to see so many different layers of these people. You know, you're not just seeing, nothing is on the surface, that you get to see so many different sides of these characters. I love it that we don't all, I think in real life, we never really know what's going to happen and we don't know what the answers are. People want to know so much, but I like that we don't really ever get to know fully. I'm really going to miss it. I'm sad it's going to be over.
I know. How do you describe the show to someone who hasn't seen it? Or do you feel like there's a theme that runs through it?
I'm trying to think. A lot of times I don't, because it's so complicated. I'm like, well, there was this thing and it happens. It's kind of like a rapture. I don't even know. Sometimes I just say, just go watch the trailer or just look. But it's amazing and it's really weird. And
do you ever watch the episodes with anybody? Or do you watch them at all afterwards?
I do. No, I definitely do. Do I watch them with anyone? Yeah, I'll watch them with David, or I'll watch them, like, you know, the first one, I'll always, as you know, whoever's, we'll have a little get together and I'll have a cocktail and sit and watch the first one. And I think I watched the pilot of the first one with Margaret and Justin and all of us together. And then the last one, I can't remember. Sometimes I'll just watch by myself. Mm-hmm. I don't have a particular ritual.
Do you get flooded with
questions?
But we
don't get to see them until they come on the Sunday on TV. So
Wow. That's
always, a lot of times I'm not in town or I'm in Europe or something and I can't see one, and that sucks.
Yeah. I was wondering if people, you know, your friends or family would call you and say, what just happened?
Does anyone ever beg for the answers, you know?
definitely sometimes people will text me or say, what the fuck? Or wow, or yeah. I mean, that's the great thing is that we don't have the answers. So, mm-hmm. you know, it's kind of easier that way. I think if I knew all the answers and everyone was asking, I'd be tempted to tell everyone.
There was this great scene between you and the character of Evie when she says it's impossible to cry when you're eating baby uh-huh. carrots. Do you really think that's impossible to cry while eating baby carrots?
No, because I kept crying. It didn't really work. She made me feel better, but I think it's just that, you know, any kind of distraction away from what's actually happening kind of snaps you out of it a bit. Mm-hmm. I liked that scene.
So another question we always ask, too, is if, you know, this event happened in real life, like the rapture or the departure, would you find yourself joining a group like the Guilty Remnant, or would you just kind of be on your own and whistle past the graveyard like it didn't happen?
Oh my God, I think I would just get my family together and go to some house in the mountains somewhere and completely hide out. Plan for the end, I guess. I would just get really practical about it. I don't think I'd want to just keep going on like everything was normal. I'm not a big denial person. I kind of like to deal with things head on.
I like that philosophy. That's how I am thanks to now watching zombie movies. I feel like I'm very prepared. I know who I'm going to grab on my way to the mountains. God forbid anything were to happen.
I mean, I think about it. I used to think about it all the time. Like if anything horrible happened in New York, I have a basket for my dog in the basement. So I always thought like, okay, I could put the basket on the bike, and then Milo could fit in the bike. I mean, now I have way too many kids, and I definitely, I'll be walking, but mentally, I do think about that sometimes, like, wow, how could we get, I have a country house that's like 2 hours away, and I think, mm-hmm. like, well, how could we get there, and how long would it take, and what would I need? I definitely think about it, but I would imagine if something like this happened, I'd probably want to go live a slightly more isolated, mm-hmm. protected kind of life. Anyway,
we are so incredibly excited for season 3 when it was announced, and you know, just the electricity throughout the fandom took off, and we are so thankful to be able to have you here on for this interview.
Oh, thank you. We were so grateful to everyone. That whole little amazing moment that happened towards the end of the last season was just so fun for all of us, the way that all the fans kind of stood up for us and fought for us, and it was so great, and it felt so good, and so we're really happy too.
Yeah, you know, your show is a niche mm-hmm. show, but it's so important to so many people that watch it, and they mm-hmm. absolutely love it. They love you, they love Damon, they love all the people that are involved with it, and I'm one of those people, and I was so pleased to hear that not only will the show be returning, but you are returning, and that makes
Thank
me incredibly
you.
Excited.
Yay.
Well, Liv, thank you so much for joining us
thank
again.
Thank you, guys.
I really appreciate it.
Well, an early congratulations for your pregnancy. We just celebrated, as Blake was saying, our daughter. She just turned 1 this year. And as you know, time with these little ones goes so fast. So I'm really excited for you as one mom to another. I'm just really excited
thank
for
you.
This new adventure that you'll be having with 2 little ones. It makes
thank you so
lots
much.
Of coffee
thank
in your future.
Little naps.
Yes.
Yeah. Thank you so much.
Well, there you have it, guys. Liv
Ooh.
Tyler.
Ooh. She's amazing.
Gosh, I just love her voice. It's such a unique voice.
I know.
And every once in a while you wonder, oh, is this for a character? But no, that's her voice. And it's like this beautiful, sings to your soul in so many different ways. And when it comes out of Meg Abbott.
Oh, I know. That's what makes it even better.
Right? It's just this very sweet, lovely, lovely voice. And then for it to be from such a really, really scary, frightening person because of the power and the fury. That this woman, I don't even know the right word, but this anger and how she's been able to manipulate people.
Yeah.
It's.
I think you said the right thing when you said fury and mm-hmm. power. Those are two words that I think I would use to describe Meg. I think I would also use a little bit maniacal too, because she obviously has a plan.
Yeah.
And she's not about chaos. I don't think she is. She just. Because chaos.
I think she likes to bring chaos.
Well, that's a thing. The difference between the two that I think I'm suggesting is, I'm not saying she does it for chaos' sake. I think she has a plan. She likes to create it, but there is an ultimate goal in the end. And obviously we saw that in season two. And how about that story that she talked about with Pete Berg and how he was just telling her, you're a good actress. Now just do what you're supposed to do and don't get fucking hurt. Right? Mm-hmm. Like that was awesome.
Yes.
That was great. A lot of great tidbits that she had to share. And, you know, one of the things that I spared you guys is before we started recording, I told her that she was so terrifying in season two that I'm even though I fell in love with her when she was in Armageddon, I'm never going to be able to watch that movie the same way ever again, because now all I see is Meg Abbott. So and I think that's a good thing.
It is a good thing.
I think that's quite the good thing. I don't want this episode to end.
I can tell, but you know what? I'm getting excited because here we are. We're in the summer, and that means we're a season closer.
That's
to
right.
Seeing The Leftovers again.
And they're in production already. They're shooting it. They've written it. They've written most of it. God, I'm ready for this show to come back.
Me too, and I'm ready to continue the conversation. So everyone, continue the buzz. Let's make sure that even though The Leftovers isn't on air right now, that doesn't mean that we're quiet. All right? Let's be loud and vocal about how much we adore this show.
Especially for the Emmys.
That's what I'm getting at.
Yeah, let's let the Academy know that The Leftovers seriously means business and that it really, truly is, I would say, one of the top three or two seasons of television that's ever been produced. And listen, I'm willing to hear an argument otherwise, but I'm going to tell you, this is America, and you're entitled to your opinion, but you're wrong. If you tell me otherwise, that's just how that goes.
Well, on that note,
ready to close out the show?
We are.
All right, let's do it.
Everybody, remember, we want to keep this conversation going, so please reach out to us on social media. That's Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. All of our names there are Living Reminders.
And of course, if the social media isn't enough for you, in the meantime, you can always reach us at livingreminders@gmail.com.
You know, I was just thinking.
What's that?
I was saying Living Reminders really slowly, and yep. It's live. Live on the Living Reminders. Hashtag. God, I just threw you off. Sorry.
No, it's okay. I miss this music.
It's beautiful.
Oh my God, I miss Max Richter.
Me too.
Oh, you know what? Shameless plug. Go back and listen to our interview with Max Richter when you get a chance. This was, I would say, maybe 5-6 episodes ago we talked to him. Man, what a cool guy. But this music.
It's good, man. Oh, it's good.
It just touches your soul.
You know what else is good?
What's that?
The livingreminders.com website, where you can find all of our contact information and all of these previous interviews that you're talking about. I know myself, I want to do a big rewatch of seasons 1 and 2.
Ooh.
So if you're going to do that, make sure that you tune into the episode recaps, or even if you just do the actor and cast and crew interviews, just to gain more insight.
Right.
Thank you guys so much.
Thank you for joining us. Thank you for listening to me, fanboy over Liv Tyler. It was actually a complete honor to speak with her, and my wife had to put up with me as I did it. So
and so, for those of you also that this might be your first Living Reminders podcast, thanks for joining us. We're so glad that you found us. Now is the time to watch and learn about the show and
right.
to delve into it. There are amazing blogs and resources out there, including one of our own, livingreminders.com. Check it on out. But thank you.
Thank you guys
so much for joining. And yes,
I do want to send out a special thank you to Missy Ortiz, our super fan and editor-in-chief of the Living Reminders blog. She helped us out with some of these questions, and she pored over them for some hours. And Brian Davids as well, of the Film Schlubs podcast. He pored over these questions with us for hours too. So thank you guys. Big, huge help. And thank you for listening.
I'm Mary.
My name is Blake.
And you've been listening to The Living Reminders. Hashtag live on The Living Reminders. It's way too long of a hashtag.
Way too long.
Too many characters.
It was a beautiful episode. Thank you for doing it with me, my darling.